Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The president has repeatedly said that fair and competitive markets have been a cornerstone of the American economy and need to remain so.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on new Packers stockyards rules.
That's why we at USDA are committed at the president's instructions and direction to issue stronger and newer rules under the Packers and Stockyards Act to provide greater clarity and strengthen enforcement under the Act. In the latest major milestone towards achieving this goal, I'm pleased to say that we'll be announcing the final rule, which we refer to as the Inclusive Competition and Market Integrity under the Packers and Stockyards Act rule. This is going to help producers and growers who have become increasingly vulnerable to a range of practices that unjustly exclude them from economic opportunity and disadvantage them and undermine market integrity in the livestock and poultry industry.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And I wish that we had been talking about the Southeastern Conference for the last couple of years.
Mary Thomas Hart is chief counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission.
But unfortunately, back in 2022, the Securities and Exchange Commission proposed a rule that would have required greenhouse gas emissions reporting for publicly traded entities. And that proposed rule would have required Scope 1 or direct emissions reporting, data from Scope 2 or electricity generation emissions, and also Scope 3 or supply chain emissions reporting. So if you're in the, you know, beef cattle sector, that means that if you're selling beef that is eventually processed or sold by a publicly traded company, which most beef in the United States is, you would have been subject indirectly to reporting your greenhouse gas emissions through the supply chain so that that information would make it to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Fortunately, this week, the SEC finalized that rule without those requirements. So I'm going to say it's a pretty big win for cattle producers across the country.
Sometimes, though, we'll see an exemption for ag, and then that exemption disappears. What about this time?
Great question. So, you know, I think we provided the SEC with a couple options when we commented. The first option was, you know, just give us a carve out for all farmers and ranchers. That would have been, you know, pretty easy to interpret. But at the same time, you know, what is a farmer and rancher? Is there a size threshold? There were a lot of questions that came with that. And our broader and maybe more aggressive ask, which is what the SEC ended up doing, was just to eliminate all supply chain emissions reporting outright. So now not only are farmers and ranchers excluded from having to submit those reports, but anyone that's just a supplier to a publicly traded company is no longer required to file those reports. So I think, you know, the SEC really did try to keep it simple. They tried to make sure that there weren't a lot of follow-up questions about who needed to report and who didn't need to report. Instead of having to worry about all of that, they just exempted anyone that is in the supply chain of a publicly traded company.
And we also know in ag that you can get a win and then have it erased by opponents or even the government itself.
So, you know, I think we're always mindful about new efforts from the federal government to create an emissions reporting requirement for farmers and ranchers. You know, for years, we've been kind of back and forth with the EPA as they try to develop methodology so that farmers and ranchers can calculate their on-farm emissions. EPA has been unsuccessful in finalizing anything like that so far. But we're always watchful as EPA promulgates new rules, as new policies are considered on Capitol Hill. And we'll continue to monitor the SEC as they, you know, continue to kind of, I think, increasingly show an interest in getting supply chain data, whether it be through emissions reporting or labor data or, you know, whatever that looks like. So we'll continue to be mindful of those types of rulemakings down the road. But for now, I think, you know, we can take a rest and know that we made it through this rulemaking with I would say a pretty big victory.
And if you want to learn more about this issue, she says,
you can go to policy.ncba.org to keep up with this issue and all of the issues that we're working on in Washington, D.C.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
When you were before this committee a year ago, I cautioned against raising capital requirements on commodity derivatives that our agricultural and energy producers use back home to keep prices of food and power stable for consumers.
Former chairman of the House Ag Committee, Frank Lucas from Oklahoma, questioning Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
At the time, you said that was a very specific concern and you weren't sure the proposal would even address commodity derivatives. And in fairness, that was before the Boswell proposal was officially published. Unfortunately, we now know that the proposal does impact commodity derivatives, and in fact, they are among the most penalized financial products that banks offer. And I would note for just a moment, I very much appreciate your comments and responses to Chairman McHenry about the nature of the overall proposal. Congress wanted end users to be able to secure their hedges without posting margin to keep the derivatives markets affordable. But I've seen estimates that some of these types of transactions for end users could face 10 times the capital requirement. Chairman Powell, make me feel a little better. Ease my concerns here. Will you and the Fed work to fix this?
Let me start by saying I want to echo the fact that our commodity markets and our capital markets are a huge national asset, and we need them to be functioning well and with as little friction as possible. I now understand that what you're referring to is the things that were done to increase capital requirements for various kinds of derivative activities. And I'll just say that's an area where aware of the concerns, and it's an area that we're taking a very close look at.
I appreciate that. I was a member of the Dodd-Frank Conference Committee, where there was bipartisan support to not disadvantage end users, farmers, ranchers, small businesses. This had broad bipartisan support then and still does today. Unfortunately, the Fed could undermine this longstanding work done by Congress. I'd like to enter a few letters into the record, Mr. Chairman, that discuss the detrimental impact to end users. First, a joint Agricultural Trade Association letter from the American Farm Bureau Federation, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, among seven others. Next, a joint Energy Trade Association letter from the American Gas Association and four others. And lastly, a letter from the American Public Power Association and the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Powell, I'd now like to focus on how the proposal is set to significantly disincentivize banks from offering clearing services. In Dodd-Frank, Congress mandated central clearing as a way to reduce risk in the system. The number of banks that can clear derivatives for end users has reduced over time, making it harder for end users to find a bank to offer this service. There are some estimates that the Fed's proposal will increase capital for this activity by 80%. I'm worried that this will make it even harder for end users to find a bank to clear their hedges. This also comes at a time when the SEC, our friends at the Securities and Exchange Commission, has just finalized a rule in December that will increase clearing in cost in Treasury markets. This will have a real impact on market access and liquidity, not just in commodities, but the $26 trillion Treasury market that plays a critical role in the world economy. Will you work with the CFTC to address this problem?
I'll say that we're aware of those concerns, and we're prepared to work with other agencies and also to make sure that our capital proposal appropriately addresses them.
The strength of central clearing is entirely dependent on banks' willingness to participate, and problems with the Boswell endgame warrant a full reproposal to give us time to appreciate their consequences. And there are real consequences, as you and I both know, Mr. Chairman.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The 2024 projected price for corn, which is based on the average settlement price on the December 2024 corn futures contract across the month of February, is $4.66 per bushel.
University of Illinois ag economist Nick Paulson.
This represents a sizable 21% decrease from 2023's projected price of $5.91 per bushel. The 2024 projected price for soybeans, which is based on the average settlement price on the November 2024 soybean futures contract across February, is $11.55 per bushel. This is a 16% decline from the 2023 projected price of $13.76. The large decline in the projected prices will impact the guarantees that insurance policies provide, as well as the premium cost associated with those policies. Impacts on crop insurance revenue guarantees. Lower projected prices result in lower minimum revenue guarantees for revenue policies like revenue protection and revenue protection with the harvest price exclusion. And while the yields that can be guaranteed using policies like yield protection are not impacted, the value of any payments on yield losses is reduced because of the lower projected price. As an example, consider a farm with a 200 bushel per acre trend-adjusted actual production history yield for corn. At last year's $5.91 projected price, the minimum revenue guarantee for an 85% revenue policy would have been just over $1,000 per acre. At this year's projected price of $4.66, the same 85% revenue policy would have a minimum guarantee of just $792 per acre. Minimum revenue guarantees are directly proportional to the projected price. So revenue policies for corn will have 21% smaller guarantees at the same coverage level as last year, while the guarantees on revenue policies for soybeans will be 16% lower than for the same policy in 2023. Lower crop insurance premiums, but higher volatility factors. On the positive side, the lower projected prices for 2024 will also result in lower premium costs. Relative premium reductions in 2024 compared with 2023 will be less than 21% for corn and less than 16% for soybeans for most farms. One reason why the reduction in premium costs will not be as large as the reduction in the projected prices and revenue guarantees is the volatility factors which impact the cost of insurance. The volatility factors are measures of the market's expectations for potential price movements up or down from current levels. The higher the volatility, the more price volatility the market is expecting, and the higher the cost of insurance. Volatility factors are based on implied volatility measures from corn and soybean harvest futures during the last 5 days of February. The 2024 volatility factors for corn and soybeans are both slightly higher than they were for 2023. The volatility factor for corn is 0.19 this year, compared with 0.18 last year. For soybeans, the volatility factor is 0.15 in 2024, compared with 0.13 in 2023. The higher volatility factors offset some of the premium reduction associated with the lower projected prices. Strategies to consider in 2024. The lower projected prices reflect the lower price expectations for corn and soybeans in 2024 compared with the past few years. Unfortunately, producers will continue to deal with elevated production costs in 2024, resulting in a significant squeeze on potential profit margins for the year. While lower premium costs might be a welcome relief, given the lower insurance guarantees available this year, producers may also want to consider available options to increase their coverage for greater protection, given the higher production costs and margin squeeze. This could be achieved by increasing the coverage level on your typical policy if you are not already at the highest available level. Alternatively, the supplemental area plans, SCO and ECO, could be added on top of your underlying individual policy to provide additional coverage.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Treason a crop.
If nothing else, the recent wildfires across Texas and Oklahoma remind us that the Forest Service is a part of the Farm Bill. G.T. Thompson, Chairman, House Ag Committee.
You know, the fiber, the building materials, the difference that healthy forests play when we harvest on a regular basis and then replant. And so we tend to think of, I think you're right, Tony, most people will think of it in terms of the forestry tile, title and wildfires, but quite frankly, there's been a lot of croplands have been impacted by these wildfires that we see currently spreading. Hopefully the more recent snow will help to turn the tide on that. That disaster relief is a part of the Farm Bill. That's part of the safety net tools that we provide for.
Some might suggest that we've had fires in D.C., political fires. So can we pass a farm bill with the budget situation?
Well, I think it is possible. I think Speaker Johnson has done a good job. We most recently did what I would call a process continuing resolution. We just did that within the past 24 hours. And that was just to buy time to the middle of next week, when it looks like we're actually going to and we did that in order to honor our roles that we have, that members of Congress would have at least 3 days to be able to read the text of bills that they're voting on. And so I'm anticipating that probably by the middle of next week, we'll be voting on, I believe, 6 appropriation bills. They'll probably be combined into one vehicle, and one of those will be the agriculture appropriation bills. And that was exactly the goal that we have. And so that'll be to me, that's a significant and important hurdle to have that bill And I think that's a bill that's been negotiated in a bicameral, bipartisan way. It'll be nice to check the box on that. I think that really opens up a runway for us for the actual farm bill then.
While the farm bill is a priority, he also admits there are other priorities in the pipeline.
Well, I think workforce is always one. I'm very proud of the work that's been done by the agriculture workforce task force, basically, that I had appointed here in the 118th Congress as a part of the Agriculture Committee. This is a bipartisan group. There are 16 members, includes myself and Ranking Member Scott. There are 8 Republicans, 8 Democrats. We have 2 chairs. My hats go off to Don Davis, who's a Democrat from North Carolina, who's a co-chair, and Rick Crawford from Arkansas. And they actually finished their work at the end of, actually on Thursday, where they vetted, they had worked at developing proposals and how do we improve, what changes do we need to make to provide certainty and reliability for agriculture workforce. And they vetted those so we could see how much support and bipartisan support those proposals have. So, and that's pretty exciting. We'll take that document and we'll work that now into some type of legislative form. Unfortunately, that won't be within the jurisdiction of the Agriculture Committee. That would be Judiciary Committee. But, you know, what a great, this was long overdue that those who have a keen interest in agriculture, those who work on agriculture policy, that we look at what that significant need of workforce is. So I'm very pleased with the progress that we're making in that area as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Chairman Benham, thank you for appearing before the Ag Committee today.
Oklahoma Representative and former chairman of the House Ag Committee, Frank Lucas, on Wednesday in a CFTC hearing.
During our discussion when you were last before the committee, the Basel endgame proposal had not yet been proposed by the banking regulators. And since then, we've seen an overwhelming response to the negative consequences of the proposal, particularly to derivative end users. The proposal would have significant consequences for the health of the U.S. derivatives market and would make hedging more expensive for market participants like farmers and ranchers. I just had the chance to speak with the Federal Reserve Chairman, Mr. Powell, on this topic over at the Financial Services Committee. And Chairman Powell expressed that he was willing to give these concerns a closer look. Chairman Benham, would you be willing to assist the Fed in taking a closer look? And has the CFTC been asked by the Fed Board to offer feedback?
Thanks, Congressman. Certainly, we are willing. We've been quite active, me personally, with my colleagues at the board level, but also staff at the staff level, to share some of these concerns around what I've sort of determined as the shifting market structure and environment, which is fewer FCMs, clearing brokers, less services for small ag and energy producers in Oklahoma and across the country, and making sure, as you remember well, after 2008, that we're incentivizing clearing. In order to have a healthy clearing environment, we need all the parts together, and we want to make sure that we're not creating unnecessary barriers to clearing and clearing services for end users.
Congress has a long history of broad bipartisan support for not disadvantaging end users, including in Dodd-Frank, where I served on the conference committee. Unfortunately, the Fed is proposing to undermine the work done by Congress and this committee and to cause disruption in the U.S. derivatives market that your agency regulates. I also had the opportunity to discuss with Chairman Powell how the proposal will disincentivize banks from offering clearing services. As you know, Chairman, in Dodd-Frank, Congress mandated central clearing as a way to reduce risk in the system. I know you've expressed concerns about the decline in the number of banks that can clear derivatives for end users, which has made it harder for end users to find a bank to offer the service. Chairman Powell also acknowledged this impact is something he's looking at in the Basel endgame proposal. How do you see the proposal impacting the willingness of banks to clear derivatives for end users, and will you commit to working with the Fed to fix this?
Congressman, you know, the clearing business has very tight margins, and with low interest rates historically, I know that's changed over the past couple years. And the costs related to clearing. There's been a number of clearing members that have left the business. I stated earlier to the chairman, 20 years ago, we had 177 FCMs. Now we're down to 64. We have concentration in the top five clearing members, which are the largest banks, of over 60% of all customer money. So we need, as you point out from 2008 and Dodd-Frank, we need to incentivize clearing. Clearing is a risk-reducing function of the market. And I think we need to recognize that risk reduction function to ensure that we incentivize participants on the clearing side and then end users from using these markets.
With my remaining time, I'd just like to reiterate that the futures markets play an important role in price stability for consumers and businesses. And Chairman Benham, could you offer any final thoughts on the importance of protections in the Dodd-Frank Act for firms that use derivatives hedging?
Commercial end users, as you noted, are very much prioritized in Dodd-Frank, creating exemptions in part to incentivize the use of markets, but ultimately to understand that commercial end users typically do not present risk like a financial institution. And I think that treatment needs to remain the same as we think about policy going forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I've, over the last 6 months to a year, heard a topic the farming community and farmers are worried about, foreign ownership of land.
Indiana Senator Mike Braun with Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack at a recent Senate Ag Committee hearing.
In its report that I have right here, the GAO made six recommendations that would help USDA modernize the AFITA process, make the most of the data it collects, and collaborate better with our national security agencies. Madam Chair, I'd like to submit this into the record.
Without objection.
Thank you. According to the GAO, the current AFITA system is not meeting the mark to fully monitor foreign ownership and penalize non-filers. I have simple legislation, the AFITA Improvement Act, with John Tester, Senator Tester, as the co-lead, 14 Republicans, 9 Democrats on it, including Madam Chair. I believe that this bill is low-hanging fruit. It should be the next step that Congress takes in addressing the foreign ownership of agricultural land. Do you agree that this would be a good bill to get through the process?
Senator, it'd be a very fine bill to get through the process, but I don't think anybody should be fooled that this somehow is going to result in a significantly better system. And the reason I'm saying that is that we basically have today an honor system. We have a self-reporting system, and so if you are not an honorable person, you may decide not to report. There are 3,000, over 3,000 county recorder's offices where you could potentially file a deed and no one know about it. So unless there is some kind of central database, which I don't think folks are really excited about, of listing all of the real estate transactions that take place in this country, you've got an honor system. And if you're okay with an honor system, improving it, these are absolutely right things to do. But don't fool yourself into thinking that somehow this is going to result in a full and complete understanding of foreign ownership.
Did you look at the GAO's recommendations?
I understand. Yeah, absolutely. But they've got nothing to do. They really don't do much in terms of the self-reporting aspect of this issue.
So if the bill were amended to take care of self-reporting, would that be what you'd need to see to make it more effective?
That would be a way of ensuring that you actually were getting the information that you
Seek. That's why we have hearings, to take a good bill and make it to where
I'm telling you, Senator,
be better. If that happened, would you be okay with what?
I'd be fine with it, but I'm telling you right now, you're going to find people not very excited about the notion of a national database where every real estate transaction that takes place in this country is going to be in the federal government's purview. But the problem with these issues is it's so easy to sort of demagogue them. I'm saying you do, but it's a self-reporting system. So if you don't want to report, you take your chances.
Well, I think it's something that we could probably do to where it wouldn't end up having to be a national database, to where you could find it and just preempt it in some fashion. So,
and make sure that when you're doing that, that if it's an LLC or an LLP, that you have the ability to look into and go deeper.
Because they can hide the true owner through that. That's true.
Then the question is, well, how much of an ownership interest are you concerned about? What if it's a 1% ownership interest? Is that?
Well, I think we ought to be smart enough in this body with the help of a great agency to get to the bottom of who is owning ground and not be deterred by the fact that it might be hard to do. I think that's what I'm after.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Those vicious wildfires have burned over 1 million acres in the North Texas Panhandle. However,
we are looking at some improvement coming as firefighters continue to work around the perimeters of those fires. There's still a few hot spots burning.
But USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says firefighters may get some help from the weather this week.
We are looking at a cooler weather pattern spreading southward across much of the country. That includes the southern Great Plains. So we will see temperatures returning at least to normal levels. And it looks like the winds will stay down a bit, humidity a little bit higher.
Brad says in some areas, though, there is still a lot of vegetation that could burn.
But at least for the next several days, it looks like the threat of any additional wildfires will be fairly minimal across that region.
Giving farmers and ranchers a chance to assess the damage to their farms and to their livestock. Gary Crawford, Washington.